like to introduce ourselves. I'm John Komomo from Shepherd Services Committee. I'll start from my right, not for his very right, and see who's all is.
I'm Dama Chomaza, member of the committee.
Jane Masumena, member of the committee. Lona Maloney from I'm Ellen Cornegay from the Department of Public Service and Administration.
In Sanfontein, Department of Public Service and Admin.
My name is Ulaki Chandu from the Department of Public Service Administration.
I'm Kanda Matsoujan from the Department of Public Service Administration.
I'm Laura Sibana from the PS.
Richard Kakan, Committee.
I'm the Judiciary Committee.
Now, in front of us, the agenda is the briefing public management work by TPSA. I think the documents are ready now. You'll take us through. I'm not sure that whether it's you or somebody is going to take us, or Helen, or whoever.
To your chair, Dr. Kunage, we're going to deal with the Kaedu one, the next one. Yeah, thank you.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. Chairperson and honorable members, it's a distinct pleasure for us to do this presentation on the Public Management Watch. I believe it gives us an opportunity to provide an overview on a mechanism that has been developed over the past year that gives us a sense of having the opportunity to do diagnostic overview on departments in an effort to identify potential problematic areas with a view to at least engaging remedially with the department. The Public Management Watch is a mechanism and it's a transversal system. But what is very unique about this particular system is that it uses existing information in government. And given the mandate of the Department of Public Service and Administration, we tend to draw on human resource HR information, which we can draw from PERSAL and other related data sources. I think one of the emphases that I would like to place to this committee is that the Public Management Watch, in a sense, has a number of indicators. And these indicators are used, in a sense, to identify how various departments are actually functioning. And it is within the framework of the capacity of state that we, that this particular system was developed. So in terms of the indicators, we would find, for example, the use of sick leave, the use of the annual turnover, and so on. But I think what is important to emphasize is that in some cases where we find that the departments have a particular challenge, say, for example, in a turnover, those departments are challenged in that way. But does not necessarily mean that the departments are challenged in all areas. So in this particular area, they may be challenged, but that they may be functioning very effectively in another area. And so I think what we need to, in terms of looking at improving effectiveness, we do look at the possibility of pairing departments, but pairing departments which are strong, for example, in the area of managing turnover or managing sick leave or vacation and so on. But say, for example, a department of trade and industry may show a particular weakness in terms of how it manages its sick leave, but it may be very strong in managing the turnover. So when we say that you will see a number of graphs, and you will see that they are basically reflecting what we call, what is called weak departments, but I think what we prefer to say challenge departments. But we shouldn't really say that these departments are weak all in generally, because we are looking at very specific areas based on indicators, which could change from time to time. And currently we are using the data that has been available to us from the end of the of March 2007. So in the next quarter we could find that the same department has significantly improved in that area but shows weakness in another. So I don't think we should make a definitive statement. But what I can ask is that Hank go over it before we start with the question, and that will show you the different indicators.
Just for clarity, for my sake, we talk about turnover. What turnover are we talking about?
Let's go through and see.
Okay.
Yeah, that's exactly what. Once he's done the presentation, it will help.
Thank you, Chairperson and committee members. Like Dr. Carnegie was saying, you know, obviously we use the existing information from PASHAL and sort of come up with that. And the whole purpose really is to just see how we can improve the public service and also sort of to facilitate the whole culture of learning, to understand, you know, where is our problem and where can we actually improve it. And then once somebody has actually come up with the solutions, to actually share those solutions amongst the whole public service. And obviously I think the President has also been talking about, you know, that we have to have this culture of peer review within the public service. And for us this is an instrument that we use to actually facilitate that peer review. In the background you would notice we had approval in Cabinet in 2005 in December to actually run the system. And we've run it quarterly now since December of 2005. When we say we've run it quarterly, we've run the assessments of departments in 2005 every quarter since now. And then we are now starting a whole process and of presenting the findings of the whole system to different sort of groupings of people. Obviously, it seems the portfolio committee is one of our first sort of forum. We have presented it to the GNA cluster, and we are scheduled to present it next week to the PCC. And there we present the whole analytical report, and it just seems some logistic arrangements went haywire, but the report is not submitted on copies that haven't been presented today. And then, you know, again, we identify problem areas where we think we need to work on, and then obviously we initiate some interventions for it. So, and as Doctor has indicated, we are looking at combining, you know, grouping departments. Some departments that have solved the problems and have learned the lessons with those departments that are in need of the intervention. And when we say, at the end of the day, When we say the department is challenged based on our indicators, basically we're saying there's a couple of things that could sort of lead to this. The one is definitely data problems. So typically, you know, we have a problem with vacancies on PASHAL.
especially our payroll and salary system. So basically, what tends to sometimes happen is departments, when they're in the process of setting up a new structure for their department, they would basically create the new structure onto payroll and then transfer the people across from the one structure to the old structure to the new structure. And then, unfortunately, if we read PASL at that stage, we actually see two structures. And we don't have a way to distinguish whether this is the old and the new structure. So typically a department that's got 500 people, if they create a new structure with also, or 500 posts, a new structure with 500 posts, we actually see 1,000 posts. And then also what happens, the people say the same. So obviously we see there's 300 people, and then all of a sudden, you know, obviously their vacancy rate becomes much higher. So we're saying, you know, one of the reasons why your indicators would look bad is because your data is not well on payroll. So we say once we sort of identify departments and start working with those departments, that's probably our sort of first approach to say, if I say you've got a 40% vacancy rate, is that real? Is that a true reflection? And then we say, you know, the next problem that could be is your administration within the department. So obviously if we take, let's say, leave as an example, somebody, you know, what could happen is that the managers, yes, are ensuring that the leave forms are completed, but those leave forms are never, sort of, doesn't flow to the HR section, which has to capture the leave forms within to payroll. So we're saying there could be a problem why your statistics don't look good. And then obviously the last one is the whole management issue. You know, the department might not look good on the statistics because, yes, the management is not well. So what that means, again, leave, the managers are not ensuring that leave forms are completed when people are not at work and that whole management. And then, you know, we would sort of assess in initiatives, because there's a lot of initiatives within the public service to try and clean up, you know, our systems and clean up our sort of administration and management. So we would be sensitive to other initiatives already on the way. So typically in Home Affairs, there's a whole sort of drive to clean up their data and also administration and management. So we won't sort of rush in where other people already are at work. So, again, like Dr. said, you know, we work with available information. We're currently using the information that comes from PASHOP, which is the payroll and salary system, the India monitoring system from National Treasury. That's where they're tracking sort of the expenditure within the departments, national and provincial departments. And then we also use the Accountant General's information. And sort of the outcomes of the previous two audit reports, we use that to actually sort of grade departments. We are in the process of starting to look at the performance data. National Treasury has, in the intergovernmental sort of sphere, they've started a system for reporting on non-financial information. And that's where, and it's now limited to provincial departments, they are sort of reporting based on the outputs. So typically in housing, we say we were meant to build 300 houses, so for this quarter we've built 200 houses. So we are sort of starting to look at that information to incorporate it into our system as well, so that we can look at, you know, the management type of issues as well as the output type of issues. Then maybe if I can quickly run you through the indicators. And I think we will try and circulate these tables to the committee as well. But the first indicator we look at is turnover rate. And our definition of turnover rate is basically people leaving the public service. So we say it's the number of people that are leaving the public service as a percentage of people that were there at the beginning of the period. So we would look at over a 12-month period and say, okay, how many people? So a department started off with 100 people, 10 people left in that year, so obviously their turnover rate will be 10%. And we're saying, you know, why we look at sort of turnover rate, we say it could show us a bit of an unhappy workforce. You know, there's performance management problems with performance management, that people leave because they're not sort of you know, awarded or acknowledged. There could be career management issues. So within that, and obviously the other big one is the inability to retain people within the public service. So we would sort of look at turnover rate in that sense. We also make a distinction between turnover rate for professionals and managers versus the rest of the public service. Because obviously we say the impact of a high turnover rate in management and professional people will also obviously have a greater impact on the ability to perform. Replacement, we look at replacement rate, and that's the ability for us to actually replace those people that are leaving. So we would look within our occupation, and again, for professionals and managers, and say, how well are we able to replace the people that are leaving? So currently within the public service, under professionals and managers, we're replacing 139% of people. So for every one person that leaves, we actually appointing at 1.39 people, you know. So in that sense, we are able to actually replace the people. Obviously, we have to acknowledge that the seniority of those people, the experience of those people, you know, in a normal trend, you would find, you know, the more older, experienced people leaving and the younger ones coming in, but at least it seems we're able to replace, you know, those positions. Then we go into vacancy rates, and we track vacancy rates. And currently, I think there's lots of publications around about what is our vacancy rates and those things. And under professionals and managers, the vacancy rate is currently 37.9%, so nearly 38%. In the rest of the public service, we're looking at 20%. But like I explained in the beginning about the data problem, we currently are saying we cannot say that vacancies equal skill shortages. Because unfortunately we know that the majority of those positions cannot be filled because the funding is not available for those positions, and yes, there's some data quality problems. But because if you look at the vacancy rate in relation, in comparison to the expenditure on what we call compensation of employees, which is the HR budget, you would see in last financial year, our HR budget, we've underspent by, I think it was 2.5%. So that is actually the only money we have available to employ new people. It's 2.5%. So 2.5% over 1 million people, we're looking at, let's say, 25,000 people. And unfortunately, currently on the system, we'll tell you there's in the region of 300,000 sort of vacant posts. So we're more looking at vacancies at the moment as an indicator to say how good or how bad are you managing your organizational structure within the department, and not as really an indicator to show us skill shortages. So I think then we have indicator about the length of vacancies. So basically what it looks at is the number, it takes the vacancies that are currently on your structure, and we determine how long is those posting vacant. And currently the average is about 16 months that those posts are sitting vacant within the structure. And again, I think we need to acknowledge that a lot of those vacancies are not funded, so they actually can't be filled, and therefore you would see that period there. Then we look at additional posts. Those are posts that you appoint people in additional to your structure. So it's really meant to be for these short-term projects and stuff that you actually did not plan for within your sort of normal planning cycle. So if we, let's say, have to develop some strategies or whatever, and our department is not sort of actually mandated to, or not mandated, but we're not actually equipped to come up with strategies, we're implementation department, for argument's sake, then you would appoint people additional to actually develop the policy, and then once that's done, So we track that because, again, it shows us a little bit about credibility of your structure. Because obviously if you're continuously employing people additional, it shows us that your structure itself is not credible. You know, that we have problems with that. The next one we track is what we call out of adjustments. And the out of adjustments is basically it's where the person's salary level differs to the salary level of the position that person is in. And then we track it. And currently we're running at about a 9.4% average in the public service. And again, it does point us back to the structure. And I think you would probably notice a lot of our indicators are based on the structural information, the information around the structure of the department. And we are saying that obviously the structure is the backbone of the department. If that is well, then we would believe a lot of other things are well. Then we track the leave credits within departments. And obviously we assume that, you know, the average person in the public service do fall sick. They do become sick, and you would want to see the trend of people's sick leave credits coming down as that. So if you find in a specific department that the sick leave credits are not coming down, you know, it says that I think we all have 36 days sick leave. So if your sick leave credit stays fairly high, fairly close to 36, we probably, you know, what we then assume is people are still getting sick, you're just not processing it. So again, you might have a data problem, you might have a management or an administrative problem. So we look at that. And then the reverse of that as well is if you do pick up that, you know, within a specific department, there's a lot of sick leave taken and the sick leave utilization is high, again, it might indicate you a sick department. And you know, it'll indicate issues like, you know, maybe people are not granted leave, you know, normal annual leave, and therefore they have to take sick leave to actually just get away from work. You know, overstretched, overworked people obviously tend to become more sick, and therefore they have to take sick leave. So the next indicator we look at is what we call backdated service termination. And again, this one specifically looks at the workflow and the administration within the department. And what that indicates to us is the number of transactions you do backdated in termination. So for example, the person's service is ending at, let's say, end of March. But what we then can see on the system is that the department only processes this one in June or July. The transaction only gets processed. So they do it then backdated. And then again, like I say, that will show us a sense of how good is the workflow, the administration within departments. That's that one. And then we do an average about how long of the transactions you do backdated, how long do you do it backdated. And then we go into the expenditure sort of indicators where we look at, you know, your percentage spend on compensation of employees, which is the HR budget. And our range is between, you know, that 5% sort of range that National Treasury also use. Then we look at your expenditure on goods and services. How are you spending your goods and services? So within the year, we look at the projected expenditure. And then at the end of the year, we actually look. So the current sort of run we did, we looked at the whole financial year. So it's actually the outcomes of that year. And then we look at the audit outcomes of the previous two audits. Again, if you received a qualified audit disclaimer, those things we actually will rate people on those indicators. So that's in brief. And I have to acknowledge, I think it's probably difficult to follow without this one page, but we'll definitely get it to the committee. And then what the next slide, and now I'm back onto the slides. The next slide just shows us some trends within the public service since December of 2005. Sorry, I think it's the slide that looks like this one. It talks about trends. So the first one, that's a graph. It talks about replacement rate, professionals and managers, replacement rates, the rest. What this slide shows us is like I said, we've been able to actually appoint more people that are leaving. And our overall numbers in the public service are definitely also showing that. So we have an increase in numbers of employees. Steadily, what seems to have happened now is we're at a state now where the replacement of professional managers seem to be slowing down. So you'll see the curve sort of coming down. It doesn't happen in all the departments, all the provinces, but I think the growth in that sort of especially the management, we had quite a substantial growth over the last 3-4 years. Where there was in senior management, there was about 3,000 odd sort of people about 3 years ago, and we're nearly close to 6,000 now. So we've been able to grow that sort of part. And also been able to grow, but probably slower, the rest of the public service. But it seems the two have sort of changed sort of track now. So that's just some of the trends that we've looked at. And then, if you look at now the next slide, and that one that looks like this one, it gives you the replacement rates for the different provinces. And what you would see is that the National Department and Mpumalanga and are able to actually, so at the moment they're growing the rest of their public service at a higher rate than what the senior management are growing at. You know, Western Cape, Free State are sort of fairly on par at this moment. Then the next slide, we look at your additional post and your post-fold of adjustment. And obviously we think for us that's a positive trend. Where it seems department structures are getting better. I think we've obviously got still a lot of work to do, but at least we can see some improvement. And hopefully we won't say this is a fact, but hopefully it's due to sort of our ministers changes in the public service regulation, you know, that people need to consult around their structures and those things. So you can see those trends are definitely coming down. Then I think this page here would probably show you, these are the departments that according to our assessments are what we would call the more challenged departments and departments that need to be assisted. So in our scoring, this is the list that comes up. And then, so now our next phase is, okay, is how do we actually go forward with these departments? So obviously Limpopo, Sports, Agriculture, Eastern Cape, Western Cape, Education, and obviously the list goes on. But what we have done now is sort of taken those departments and then actually looked at what is happening. And when we look at the different sectors, it seems that the housing sector and local government sector departments, and I think I didn't say it, but our focus currently are just on the national and provincial government departments, so we don't look at local government yet. So we're saying there's four sort of local government housing departments, because in some provinces they combine the function into one department, so we can't always distinguish between the two. So local government housing, works, roads and transport seems to be the sectors that seems to be the most challenged based on our indicators. And then arts, sports, education, economics comes down. And then if we look at the provinces into which provinces does these departments belong to, we have the Eastern Cape with 6 departments in there, KZN with 5, and Northern Cape with 4 and 3 with Northwest. So what we're now proposing to do and to take this all forward is actually to create what we call the intervention grouping. And what we're doing with those groupings is the housing local government sector, we would use DPLG as the National Department of Provincial Local Government. They would be the coordinating department for us around that grouping. And they've actually also done some assessment around the local government functioning provinces. And they would lead that whole project with the assistance of DPSA, the Premier's offices, because again, the Premier's offices have this oversight role in the provinces as well. And then obviously the local government housing departments in provinces. So again, we will indicate, you know, within the team, there will be the good performing departments will actually assist the other ones. And then we also will look at the roads, work, transport department within and create the similar type of working group around that. And then in the Eastern Cape, have a project with the Premier's offices in the Eastern Cape. We also envisage in the next sort of rest of this year, we would look at enhancing our assessment sort of methodology. I think we can always improve. And then I think the big one is how do we actually fix the problems that we've identified? And then I think that's where we, for the next couple of months, will focus our attention on. So obviously we will use these groupings as probably our test cases and those things to learn from and say, how do we actually do this? We would also embark on a whole sort of marketing awareness campaign to actually sell the whole system to DGs, HODs, because, and Premier's offices. Because, you know, it does have some benefits if we from Pretoria side can assess people, but obviously if people monitor themselves, then we'll it's probably much more effective. And then, again, we'll go into capacity building program to create capacity, how to intervene and assist people of fixing that. So, thank you, Chair.
Thank you, members. I think members have opportunity now to raise questions. Laura?
Thanks, Chair. I would start by asking the question, which is, how is this new amendment bill that is coming, the public service amendment bill that is coming, is going to alleviate some of the problems that you've encountered? Whether do you think that it is going to assist in one way or another? And another, the second question, Chair, is, in most cases, you'll find that the problem is within the structuring of the department. You know, the way they structure their staff components. I just want to check: is it not necessary for the a national government, a national department, to have maybe a framework? For instance, if I'm a manager of whatever, I should know that in order for me to perform well, I should have 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 staff members, other than myself deciding how many members do I have. Because this creates a problem. Because as manager, they come up with organograms that suit them, not suit what the department is supposed to deliver at the end of the day. I think a national framework is needed for each and every department to know that in order for me to do this work, I will need how many staff component members, rather than just everybody sees and come up with his. Because we'll be having this misconception of saying the departments are having these huge unfilled posts, although there are no filled posts, because if the post is not budgeted for, there's no post that was created at all. But, you know, in the media, it is created already that there are these vacancies that the government don't want to fill. So I think we need to do something around that. Maybe we have something in mind that you can suggest.
Chair, I would like to know, with all this information you gather, you accumulate, what do you do with information? Do you report to a specific body? Or what do you do with this information? If you find out there is, in one department, 50 people take sick leave every day, what do we do? Thank you, Chair.
Provider?
Chair, firstly, I just want to establish whether there is a relationship between PMW and the PSC. As I hear the presentation, it seems to me there should be some kind of relationship between the two. That's the first question. But of course, I acknowledge that this is a relatively new component as compared to the PSC, but it does seem to me that there should be that kind of patient relationship too. When you make recommendations, to what extent have your recommendations remedial recommendations for remedial action been implemented, and what tools do you have to ensure that these recommendations are implemented if one department does not comply? Thirdly, Chairperson, speaking of backdated salary payment or whatever other kind of payment, I want to just be specific here. What would you explain as the causes for delayed payment in the first instance? And secondly, in the age of this modern technology, would you say that the existing technology is beginning to help speed up payment, including payment of salaries? I talk here of pastors who get employed in January and they only start getting paid in March or April, and therefore the backdating that you are also talking about. And lastly, Chairperson, I want to go home to KZN. I just want to establish an understanding on your one page that finding the first page that talks to finding challenge department. Mm-hmm. You're making mention of the provincial parliament, KZN vote 2. Are you suggesting provincial parliament as the institution, the parliament as the institution as a whole, or certain sections within it? Because I see you have made mention of a specific department, including the office of the premier, but you are also saying parliament. I'm assuming you're just saying broadly parliament is challenged in these different areas that you've been talking to. Thank you.
Again, I recognize it, but I think there's a string of questions. Let me be, allow them to respond, and then we take another round of questions.
Thank you, Chair. I think maybe I'll go backwards. I think when we talk about KZN Parliament, it's actually the office of Parliament. So it's the official, so it's, we don't sort of assess the MECs and representatives there. So it's the office part of it. So again, if we look at national parliament, it would be the office of the parliament actually that we were looking at. I think the backdated sort of payments, I think one of our big causes is the workflows within the department. And I think also looking at technology, unfortunately, we're still sort of using our HR system that we're currently using as Paschal. It was developed in sort of the late 80s, implemented in the early 90s. So the management and the operations of Paschal is in most big departments still centralized in head office and maybe your regional offices. So the form, actually the termination form, has to travel sort of via cars, and I think in the Eastern Cape we mapped one process where the form actually traveled by bicycle first from the farm school to the farmer's house. And then from there, when the farmer went to town, he had to take the paper to the district office, and then it flows, eventually it gets to Bishu, and then the transaction is captured. So I think, I assume the committee is aware of the whole process that we are embarking on now about replacing our sort of IT systems in government. It's called the Integrated Financial Management System. And we definitely hope that system will be driven on a much more decentralized sort of basis, where, yes, if I'm a manager and somebody within my component resigns, I can actually capture maybe just the suspension of the salary, you know, to start stopping the whole process, and that doesn't have to wait for somebody at head office to do it. So I think for us that is probably one of the big causes, is the physical workflow of paperwork within the department, that one. Our sort of recommendations, what we've been doing on consistent basis is to actually feed our information and the findings that we get from our information system into the whole Lakotla system. We've made various sort of recommendations which was agreed upon or which cabinet turned into decisions. Again, like the one I mentioned about where we changed the public service regulations to definitely inquire the strengthening of structures, that people's structures are strengthened. And on that point, Cabinet has also endorsed the decision to come up with norms and standards, staffing norms and standards within the public service. So DPSA has started and are working on that. Education sector has embarked quite a long way in that whole process. Is that we come up with blueprint sort of structures and say, great, if you are a health department, this is typically how your structure ought to look. Roughly, these ought to be your ratios of so many admin staff versus nurses versus doctors versus this, you know, the split between how much you ought to be resourcing your primary health care versus your secondary health care and those things. So we sort of embarking on that process, and I think it's not an easy one, but I think we're working on that one. I think the tools for non-compliance, I don't think we have probably much tools to obviously we have the whole sort of public service regulations and the non-adherence to that tools to look at, but I must say we haven't. So far, I think we're just putting the information on the table, and then, you know, so far we've been getting good sort of support, and departments are working on fixing those problems. So I think we haven't really had the need to enforce yet. I think the link between us and the Public Service Commission is obviously we sort of definitely more internally focused. So again, we would do monitoring evaluation for the sake of learning, improving, and definitely supplementing to what we do with the Public Service Commission and vice versa. So we in the Public Service Commission, and maybe I should have mentioned that as well, is the what we call the Public Management Watch System is part of the what we again call the government-wide M&E system. It's a transversal system within there, and the Public Service Commission is part of that working group. So we have regular sort of interactions, and we as far as possible try to use the same information. So we would supply the Commission with statistics and those things from our part. So we like to say we are working together on these things, but we always have to respect their autonomy and that. I think the question is, what do we do with this information? So currently, like I said, we've been feeding it consistently to the cabinet, and some decisions have come from there. We are now starting our process of presenting it. Okay, I also mentioned we're presenting it to the PCC next week. So the premiers and the provinces hopefully will endorse and take action on these things. We're also embarking on presenting now to some of the MinMecs. The relevant MinMecs, we would then go and present our findings to them to obviously also try and get actions going from there. I would like to request if somebody else can talk about the Public Management Bill and how that would assist us. But again, yeah, I don't know, Dr. Chandu maybe can help me on that one.
I think what I would like to address with regard to the questions that have been raised is that essentially, as all systems, the Public Management Watch is a new system. So I think its introduction and its use is progressive. So essentially up to now, much of what has happened is in using it for the primary purposes of doing a diagnosis. And therefore, what to do about what you find is in the current phase. Hence, the active collaboration with the Department of Public, of Provincial and Local Government, which is the first department where we have done the presentation at the MINMAC and now going to PCC, which is quite active with the department. So from that perspective, that's what we are now entering the phase of how actively to come up with ways of taking remedial action in those cases where we identify serious problems. And part of this is a developmental phase of this particular system. I should also say it's not only limited to government. We are entering a partnership with the UN around a particular methodology that looks at remedying the problems at local government level, which is where they are operating. I think that in terms of the matter that was raised by the member, I think I'll defer to Dr. Chandra on that one.
Yes, just in terms of the, you know, sort of public amendment bill, you know, there is a lot of potential, you know, sort of with it to remedy some of the problems that we basically, you know, sort of running into, just around enforcement mechanisms, you know, and a whole lot of other things. But, you know, potential and actual performance, you know, all these, you know, sort of two different things. But I would say that there's a lot of potential with it to basically remedy a lot of the problems that we've run into in terms of the Public Service Act, you know, given that there isn't enough around enforcement. It specifies what's required, but doesn't then say these are then the penalties, you know, in cases of, you know, basically non-compliance. And in this area as well, I do think there is potential to basically unblock, you know, some of the issues. But when it comes, the big test would be always, as always is the case when we come to present for the portfolio committee. So there's, you know, policy and implementation, that gap, that's always the critical factor. But if you look at the two, for example, from a comparative perspective, look at the PFMA and the Public Service Act. I mean, the PFMA has better levels of compliance, just from an impressionistic standpoint. Because at least there you say, well, if there's no compliance with these are then the penalties, you know, kind of and so on. So from purely that, you know, perspective, you know, we should be in a better position than we are with the, you know, sort of Public Service Act. But again, still, you know, policy provisions and actual implementation, that's where, you know, the actual big test is. Yeah. But I think it will be pointing in the right direction.
I think, just to add on, I think it's difficult at this stage to say precisely what the correlation will be.
You know, Helen, I'm glad that I'm not in your position. I must say that. You know, when one cabinet minister resigns of strength, the next 2 days the president replaces that person. But it's few people that I'm talking about. And one of the reasons why this strike is prolonging is exactly in the submissions of the workers, this backlog. Why is it so hot yet? They say that one person is doing 3 or 4 jobs, people, and the high level of absenteeism is caused by that. Now, I don't think you do have monitoring system. But in a private sector, even in 3 days, you pick up quickly that there's a problem here. it's tiring to work two people's job. The next week you take a sick leave where you're not sick. Do you understand what I'm saying? Yeah. Now, we're not here just to interrogate your report you submit to us and go away with it. We're here to participate for the reason of trying, the objective is to sort out the problems that we have in this last 13 years. And also the length of vacancies. How long do we sit with a vacancy? And what effect, negative effect, does it have to the organization there? It's a problem. We can't one sit with this, like the way you are highlighting to us now. Something needs to be done very quick. Because I doubt if I will see Zolak in the next 6 months, he's going to resign. Jane, I was recognizing your hand, but it's just that I can't take some of the things.
Thanks, Chairperson. My question is related to relationships. Like my colleague has asked about your relationship with the Public Service Commission. I would love to know what your relationship is with family. Because we are looking at, you are saying your objective mainly is to identify problematic areas and then recommend or suggest remedial action, and which I think that would be the responsibility of somebody that is doing the remedial action. So it would be interesting to find out what relationship you have. And again, appreciating the fact that this is quite a fairly new structure, but you know, envisaging your future input to really take this further, this issue of remedial action. Do you see yourself as having input in the type of courses or the curriculum that is used in some? Because I think that will be very critical, in the sense that we have got to run courses that will address the problem areas that we have identified in the public service. I would like us to have something that, you know, trains people for other sectors, but to make sure that they address the problems that we experience in the public service and that those are relevant to that. And then my second question is around these challenges. I also would like to go home, like Comrade Kwabaza here to the Northwest. I see we have got challenges in the Premier's office in the Northwest and also in the legislature. I understand that it is the officials, not you don't deal mainly with politicians. But I would like to know specifically what kind of challenges. I suppose it's not the whole package. We have done an analysis around quite a number of issues, like the turnover rate, we have looked at the vacancy rates, etc. But with specifically to the Northwest, the Premier's office and the legislature, I would like to know as to which specific areas are they challenged with. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Chair. Mine is around the vacancies. In your report, you say you have 38% vacancies, meaning that deputy managerial vacancies, meaning that you have 42% in place. And I also want to go home to the Northern Cape. And my concern here is that we have received a number of reports of managers being appointed and acting for long periods of time, some more than a year and so forth. I want to know whether this 42% is it permanent appointees, or does it 42% also include acting positions? And then there is one concern that I'm having around caring. Because my understanding of caring of departments is when you take one strong department to assist a department that is challenged, or a weak department, to say. Now, my concern around that one is that, are you not adding the workload on a department that has been effectively running to such an extent that you may also, the result may be that the department may end up operating less effectively. So it, to me, it's a concern. It's all, almost like operation consolidation. Yeah. And, but I think project consolidate zooming specifically to correct certain things that are going wrong. But in this case, it seems to me that this ferry is something permanent. And can you please clarify on that? Thank you.
Thanks, Chief. Yeah. Firstly, one would like to thank the department for this presentation. I was always, you know, worried what exactly is this PMW, you know. But at least I'm beginning to get an idea what it is all about. I think it's a good innovative, you know, really an instrument with a potential to actually diagnose, you know, proactively what are the issues. But I want also to express a similar concern expressed by my colleagues that this being a diagnostic instrument, especially to detect, you know, bottlenecks or challenges with a view, you know, to bring about remedial, you know, program. The concern arises, I'm aware that it's only 1 year and a quarter stretching, to be precise, this being in operation. But you also report on a quarterly basis and to critical, you know, authorities like cabinet. I'm not sure what this PCC is, but if you report it to cabinet, I think it becomes very critical that now, because I mean, it's to diagnose now. In other words, you have presented 4-5 reports, if you started in December to March this year. 5 reports, but there's no indication as to when those reports have been given, you expect an action to address those issues. So it's a matter of concern, as my colleague has said, we've got some report to cabinet, probably also report to the minister. But what has been an action? Because to identify a problem and without making a follow-up, you know, it becomes a challenge. I appreciate the fact that now it's very, very new, but one cannot understand this report. What happened to those reports, to those, what you call. And then lastly, I will appeal that if we can get a full narrative, because I'm still not yet, you know, understanding some of the indicators. I'm sure they've been read somewhere. I was trying to get them. If we can get a full narrative so that one can get a full understanding of all the indicators and try to make a follow-up. And I think perhaps Chair will request that, perhaps we'll ask for another presentation. I'm still not yet clear to reply on it. Thanks.
I know, and then they are running out of time.
Thank you very much. I think I would like to address the concern that something needs to be done. I think we've come here understanding that we would have a very active engagement around the public management watch, and in particular receive as much feedback as possible from the committee to further refine the work we are doing, and we're most appreciative about it. I think in terms of something needs to be done, we may not have done the work that has been done justice. To give an example, last year around October, the provincial Department of Education in Limpopo was considered to be a very challenged department. There was consultation between the MEC for Education and the Minister. It has since, and they have taken remedial steps. And that has since, there's been a significant improvement that it no longer reflects as one of the highly challenged departments. The work with the Department of Provincial and Local Government is around the same area, because much of what our concerns would be delivery, essentially, so to minimize any challenges and blockages in terms of delivery at local government. And so that though we do not focus on local government, we work with the Department of Provincial and Local Government that actually focuses on that. So I think from that perspective, quite a bit of work has been done. But it has not been a full blast implementation given the phase within which the public management watch is in. But I also should say that this is not an isolated system. It does work jointly with other existing systems. And so much of the work may not happen exactly in the public management watch, but it's happening in other government-wide monitoring and evaluation systems, those transversal systems in there. So they actually, it's an integrated working relationship. So from that perspective, I think we would be remiss if we did not make this input at this point, because we would really not expect that members would, in a sense, not interrogate this document that we are presenting. And I think it's an excellent idea to have a follow-up where some time is devoted to looking at the indicators for members to actually review the indicators and perhaps a more comprehensive strategic and analytical document which goes with this rather than the PowerPoint, which really, in a sense, summarizes things to their minutest detail and doesn't give really the macro picture with regard to this particular event.
Thank you, Doctor. Thank you, Chair. I think a couple of questions. The acting problem, the acting problem we have, is unfortunately currently we cannot determine from the system who's acting. The only time when we can actually pick up that somebody's acting is they are paid the acting allowance. And we're saying that's probably not a true reflection of who's acting. So I think, again, people, if you can only get the allowance if the position is vacant that you are acting in again. So we don't have a good indicator on acting, and I think we do acknowledge that there's a problem and that needs to be managed. I think the capacity of pairing departments and the strain we will put on the new department is probably a brilliant point. I just don't know whether we've got another way of doing it. Again, you know, I think DPSA ourselves, we don't have capacity to assist everybody as well. And I truly believe it won't be to our benefit really to bring in consultants now to help these public services. So we hope we don't see it as really sort of a long term thing. We would really hope it's maybe 2-3 months, you know, basically just to advise in setting up the project. So let's say, Grace, I've got a problem with my organizational structure. You know, it's just not a good structure. It would be good if I'm in Department A to actually get my counterpart from another province that's got a good structure to just advise me how to clean up my structure, get a structure good, initiate the project, and then the department themselves must actually run with it. So I think that's how we would hope to manage and not put too much strain on those good ones that they turn into bad ones later. I think the relationship with somebody, what we previously picked up was the problem with the length of vacancies. And what we definitely did pick up was that one of the problems is the more senior the position is, the longer it takes to fill it. And that was because of the constitution of your panel. Obviously, managers are hardworking and they're very busy, but also I think there's a tendency at some stage to see these HR functions as add-ons to my work, you know, and therefore we've got a cabinet decision that somebody will definitely roll out a whole sort of mentoring coaching program for senior managers, that they understand that a crucial part, HR management, is an essential part of your job. It's not an add-on to your job. So if I'm a chemist, I'm a chemist, but if I'm a manager in chemistry, then that's part of my job. So as we pick up issues, we're consistently feeding it into somebody's program. Currently, we're in a discussion to obviously, as the committee probably knows, somebody is massifying this whole induction course now. So we're in discussion then to put two modules into the induction course. So one is around information management, to talk about, to give people the sense of what information can you get from the system. Because I think, you know, what we do find, not a lot of people are aware you can actually do this type of thing with information already on PASL. So it's teaching people, sort of giving managers a sense of what can you get. And then we do sort of working on to educate people on once you have information, how do you use information in decision making? Because I don't think, not everybody has that skill. So we're working that in. And then the other part, the other module we're working on is the whole HR sort of policy issues type of thing. So, okay, great. You as a manager, what is your HR, your responsibilities around managing HR, and just get everybody to have that understanding. So I think that's, yeah. Northwest, we can run, but if we give the members the full report, but let's say Northwest Economics Development Tourism has got a 14%, nearly 15% turnover rate in managers, so we see that as a problem. The vacancy rate for managers is high. More than 20 months sort of period of vacancies. So, but if we give you the full set of reports, you can actually see each individual department. And we've got color coding, red, white, or red, yellow, and green, so you can see which is the areas within a department that we feel needs to be addressed.
When you rule the country, it doesn't mean you mustn't listen to your opposition parties. When I spoke in Parliament last week, there were things I didn't criticize only. I put some solutions on the table to see if the public service administration won't think, okay, this is one of the members, let me listen to what he's saying. Now, you sit there, you look at me with big eyes, you don't listen to what I'm saying. I think, okay, for instance, we must check in our human resource system, in our environment. How many people are they suffering from HIV and AIDS working in the department? That is a big problem within the department to deliver service. If you can't plan for the day ahead, you don't know how many people are going to turn up for work, how many people are going to book off sick, then you can't deliver services. So what I'm saying here is, check whether I'm a DA. But sometimes you will listen to what I'm telling you people. Don't always sit there and think now that Julie is only criticizing the INC. I'm not criticizing the INC. I want to go hand in hand with the INC. For the simple reason, we must deliver services to our people out there. I come from the deep apartheid era. I don't know whether you were born, Shane. But when I was born in the middle of apartheid. My children, my child, one day if God spares me, I would like to help to uplift the disadvantaged communities. And that's why I'm here. If I listen to those people here, because the problem, they only here in public management watch. We must really take the hand as a committee and go out there and go tell the GPSA. That is the problem we experience with public management watch. And that is the solution. That is what we think we can do to help them. That is what we must do. And this is what I'm sitting here for. Not because I want to score political points, but because I want to help to deliver services to the people out there. I know. I watch on the TV, and it's not a joke. I don't want to show fingers to people. I watch on the TV this morning how people burn tires again because they don't get services. See? We say, but we don't know how many people is off sick and how come there's so many vacancies and we can't fill the post. And, but I don't know. Yeah, we said, now we say we don't know how many people, how many vacancies is there. With the strike, there's more vacancies now. Because they fired 300 there and 75 there, I don't know. So really, Mr. Chair, my plea is, don't put the DA one side. Let's work together. Thank you.
But I never put your position one side. And a very good example of what I want to say is what the president was saying in the response to the DA leader. Within a short space of 15 hours, he managed to follow up what the DA's critics are saying to the government. And interrogated that thoroughly and came with a response. Means that we are listening to South Africa. We're not listening only to the opposition. Whoever we meet on the ground, even the illiterate people, it is our responsibility to listen to the people's problems. Some people don't have TVs to watch what we are saying. Some people don't have radios to listen to what Skakane is saying. You have to listen to those people. Now, what the DPSA is saying, they say they lack capacity on doing this. What we should maybe commend them on is the work that they have done now. They are waiting for us as decision makers to assist them in speeding up the process of resolving all these problems. And it is our responsibility, all of us. Maybe sometimes after receiving all these reports that they are submitting to us, we sit on our own without them and say, what is the way forward? Each point that you raised to Northwest, KZN, and all of those, let us look at it. How can we approach this thing in a positive manner that will solve the problem there? I was not joking, although I was joking to say, I don't want to be in their position. To see, I'm not sure that Zola could be in the 6 months. We get tired of these things. Now, in the private sector, you won't find this thing. You can learn also from them how to say do it. Within a week's time, they pick up a problem. They will even employ temporary people or structure to monitor what is happening so that they can get a feedback quickly because they are in a competition. Maybe it's because when you are a public sector, you are not competing with any government. You are competing with yourself. Maybe that's the reason. I don't know. Now, that's why I say that we, when they report to us, we must be able to exchange with them and say, we believe this is what we should be doing, this is how we should go up on this thing. The length of vacancies that is there is causing a serious problem on service delivery, as you are correctly saying, congratulations. It's causing a serious problem on the ground. The reason why we have this report number 19, which was the initiative of Ukada Atman, it is because of this thing, why we have such good policies, but where we're supposed to, they are supposed to be implemented, they are not working. Why? We went down to all provinces, all of us. We do see to that report, which we have gathered from the people, what are the reasons. But it's 2 years down the line. We haven't gone back to those people and say now, we have tabled this in Parliament. It was approved by Parliament. This is the action that is proposed. We, I'm talking to us now, as decision makers. Some of these things, obviously, they can't act. They are waiting for us to act on them. Do you understand? So it's a good point you raise, but let us say, when you are pointing your finger like this, this one is pointing at you. We have to look into that, all of us. I'm not giving you a chance at least to escape with all. I'm trying to say, let's speak as South Africans in this. So I appreciate what you say. You're not speaking as a PTA, you're speaking as South African. Therefore, we have to seriously look into this. I think the very first question that Lorna was raising, how does then this amendment bill help us? Well, Comrade Zolaga says that there is a potential. And how long did it take to come up with this amendment bill in order for us to have a strategic intervention to help solve this problem? Why? If I say it's not my problem, it's Jane's problem, it's Mavaza's problem, whereas it's affecting the entire country, it's a problem to me as well. Because you can't have a good sleep at home when you find out the whole society is suffering because I'm not doing my work properly. I know even if it's 2 days my PA is not at work, I'm suffering. You understand what I'm saying? Now, in the private sector, immediately that happens, they will get somebody. There's always a pool of people that they pull into those positions so that the work must not stop. They are competing with another competitor, so they don't want to lose out. But in the public sector, something needs to be looked at, because you're not competing with this, with Angola. You're looking at all of these departments. And we have to really, the recommendations that you are making to other departments, we need to be exposed to those as well, so that we can take action. I always say when I'm sitting with a whimper, even we are incapacitated, that is we as a committee, because while we are sitting within these meetings, everyone saying, DSC is here, DPS here, we need to say three comrades, permanently you go to KZN and you go to Northwest State, and set up this thing and come and report to us. Because of very few, we cannot do that. You understand? Wait that there should be a recess, then we go into around town. So it's a problem. It's really a problem. And this red tape and bureaucracy that is there sometimes does not always work for the benefit of the society. It's something that we have to interrogate ourselves. Where are we? Where are we going to? How? You understand?
Okay. It's a conference. I don't know whether the conference, the Human Resource Conference, impact. So was it? You know, a few of the guest speakers there, they say, some of these things which we don't mention now is because we lack the political will to really execute our powers or mandate. Like they say, your friend is working here, he's a DA, but he's not performing. I don't want to fire him. I don't want to talk to him. That is why we can't get services, because we haven't got. They say there was about three or four speakers that said the same thing, and that is international speakers, not just local speakers here from Kaidita and from Menberg. They say our political work, we must focus on service delivery, on the people out there. Our human resources must be activated to their full potential. And then we will get delivery. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you. Maybe you want to respond to some of the other questions that were raised here.
Thank you, Chair. I think on the HIV/AIDS ones, in fact, we cannot currently from Pretoria assess the impact of HIV/AIDS absenteeism. Because I think there's a problem on the certificates, the medical certificates. People are not, I think they don't have to actually identify, you know, what type of illnesses they have.
So maybe your eyes do, they say, well,
yeah, the doctor, the nature of the illness don't have to be revealed. So again, yeah, we can pick up, you know, how many people are sick, and yes, I think we don't. I think that the one issue about And our education sector has got relief teachers. So they've got a system set up if teachers are sort of absent for a bit of an extended period. So it doesn't cover the 1 or 2 days sort of issue, but they have a system around relief teachers and that. And I think we can sort of look into it and say, is there another way to look at probably essential type services and say, we need a mechanism. If I don't come to work today and I'm in essential services, there's a way to resolve that problem. So I think that's something we need to look at. What we have requested the Secretariat to do is actually to make you copies of the full sort of full document. It has an analytical sort of report to it that talks a little bit about trends and those things. It's got masses of tables. Sorry, Dr. I grab you. It's got the table, so you would see each department and actually see the issues within each department. So I think if the committee have a look at this, and obviously I think we would greatly, you know, accept any support that can come in about addressing these things. So you know, I think the more institutions that work together sort of to get the problem fixed, the better for all of us. So I think that's all I would want. Thank you.
Thank you, sir. Just a comment on what has been said regarding, the public service performance not being, not improving accordingly because of lack of competition. I think with this ARPF, you know, this will really help our public service to pull their act together, In the sense that, you know, next month I think our report as South Africa is going to be tabled, and I think viewing ourselves from that angle will enable us to see the gap, because as South Africans we sometimes become too complacent. You know, we are doing well in so many areas and we think we are the best, but I think once we start comparing ourselves with what is happening in other African states that we sometimes think are not performing well, that will really give us the true reflection of what we are doing and assist us to really pull ourselves up. Thanks, Chair.
Just a general question or comment. Like Ntembo, I've been vetting all the time about this public management report. But as we were talking, I began to understand the whole idea and purpose. But then I got to understand now because it seems there's an intervention component to pick up the loopholes, and now when we have done that, what next? What are you supposed to do when you have picked up the loopholes in various departments? What next?
I think that what we said is that currently the issue is about identifying possible challenges. And having identified these challenges, to begin, one of the action items is in the presentation, which is to pair departments or provinces that are not performing effectively in one area with provinces or departments that are performing in those indicators, because all of the public management watch is really the key determinant are the indicators. So if I'm not performing well in terms of the city, and Hank is performing well with regard to that, then we would be paired together. But I could be performing extremely well, say for example in the management of turnover, and Hank would not be performing equally well. We would be paired, and I would be assisting him with regard to the area I'm from. So that is one action area.
The other action area that has been taken is to actually consult with the relevant department of problems. And I think I use the Limpopo problem as an example, where last year the Department of Education in the province, according to the Public Management Watch database, was not performing well at all. And the MEC in Limpopo confirmed that indeed the data that we had retrieved from the Public Management Watch was accurate and that they needed help. And since then, there was consultation between the MEC and the minister. And ever since then, that particular department has significantly improved, that it no longer is in the high-risk area. So that is one area. The third area, which is the area I mentioned earlier, is that while this is a diagnostic tool, we don't just diagnose and leave things on the shelf. There is a consultation in those areas. The one area that we said that we would be working with is really looking at more a methodology with regard to existing methodology. Particularly the UN has had a system in the Eastern Cape where they work at the local government area, where they involve the community around services so that community are able to identify what can be done. Because sometimes I think most of the time the solutions can be found within the community rather than us trying to take solutions to the community. So they evolve quite organically within community base. So that is one area that we have not fully explored. So we are looking at that as a possible mechanism. So these are the various areas that we have been working on.
Yeah, I think it will assist us as members of the portfolio committee, especially on the visit provinces, that perhaps in future, you know, when there's a particular weakness that has been identified, say, what you call this one indication, let's say 10 overs, like, for example, you have cited Limpopo. So in Limpopo, there was this shortcoming, and then that shortcoming was referred to that, and then from there, we've got an idea with, oh, there was a problem there. So that when we go to these provinces who are visiting, oh, we've got a report about this, you know, and this is what is happening. We're able to see the progress and we're able to appreciate, because it's not only to see the things, but also this problem was identified and the department's taken remedial action. We know precisely what it is. We appreciate it. We encourage them. You know, that's part of our work. So I think it will be good to make, you know, instances, you know, specifically, that will also assist the portfolio committee to make sure that their oversight responsibility is actually being taken concretely and we're able to make progress. Thank you.
Thanks, Volunteer. I think we have to proceed to the next point, that is the project, Matopile project, and Kaed. I don't know who's going to take us through on that.
Thank you.
say, Sulago will you take that through?
Thank you, Chair. Morning, Honorable Chair and to committee members. I've got two members of our team at TPSA, which I will introduce and will basically, I'm going to do mainly the introductory bit and they'll talk more to, the project. A lot of what we're going to present is basically in terms of the handout, but we will go into sort of more detail in terms of some of the issues. I've got to my right, immediate right, Mr. Katlego Matsaonyane, who is the chief director for the component that runs with this project, and Mr. Lawrence Sibane, to my far right, who basically is the project manager for this project and has been involved, with it for over a number of years. What I need to point to, the committee is that, the initiative for this project has everything to do with Matupele. It was actually part of the, cabinet memo that was done in 2004, and what was one of the components of that, CAD memo that was basically approved, sort of by cabinet. So that's the most important part. So it's about revitalizing Matupele, sort of and so on. Also, the manner in which it relates to Matupele as well points to the multifaceted manner in which we regard, the Matupele framework. The framework is not just about, public servants, attitude changes and all of those things. It also speaks to the issue of capacity as well. Because if we're talking about implementation of Matupele, issues of capacity really come to the fore. Okay, and this is an initiative that is basically directed at, the leadership of government departments to basically expose them to particular competences that would then enable them basically to be in a leadership position insofar as, Matupele is concerned. What it also points to as well, in a sort of indirect manner, because I think some of the committee members made reference to SAMDI, for instance, is that in the public service, we really haven't addressed the issue of training effectively. Okay. There's a lot of training that, public servants do, but it's very, very fragmented, and it's basically very uncoordinated. Okay. So over a period, people will go to training courses, will tick boxes and say somebody went, but it's not very coordinated. Okay, and also, obviously, it's a good initiative now that SAMDI is going on a massification course on induction and so on, as, Hank, kind of indicated. But this also speaks to that the whole area about training in public, so we haven't really got it right. There's a lot of training that has been done, but the training doesn't speak to the necessary and relevant competences that people need. People go on training courses, they go back to their offices, basically there's no movement from the standpoint of the skill level basically having been raised. Now, the idea with Project Kaedu was partly because of that, to fill that gap. What we're saying is that there's a lot of these training courses that have not basically yielded the necessary dividend for us to move the implementation program forward. So that's basically the idea with Kaedu as well. But also, secondly, apart from the issue of skills, the other issue as well was what one can refer to maybe as alienation, if you like. Because the feeling is that there is a sense of alienation between managers on the one hand and the reality over which, basically they formulate policies over. A lot of, public servants, I'm sure, don't know the reality of being in Pizana, in a rural area, getting water from a river, basically every day, those kinds of things. So the idea was that over and above the skills issue, for public service servants to get a necessary exposure 1 week in a year as per cabinet decision, for them to familiarize themselves with some of the realities, with the view being that it would make them basically much more sensitized to the realities out there when we talk about, improving people's quality of life, the poorest of the poor, and so on. Those things have to be, real, as opposed to something that people are acquainted with, only theoretically. So just in a broad level of objectives, that's where we're coming from. Okay, because not just about Batupil, but also about Batupil is also a program of implementation. Okay. Now, if the people that are driving the implementation are not sensitized or familiar with their religious out there, there is a problem. But it does speak also to the issue of just the skill set, you know, based the profile, but also, you know, sort of the reality. So broadly, it is about, it basically also speaks to, as I've indicated, the multifaceted nature of Batupil. It's not just about going to public servants and so on and training them in terms of, but also the leadership as well is also quite important. You know, types of training we go into, you know, kind of and so on. And the conceptualization of this project was, I said, to fill that gap in terms of we have training, but we have relevant training. Okay, all of those, you know, kind of things. But also, Batupil is not just a framework, but it also speaks to issues of skills, because at the end of the day, for implementation to occur, you know, the necessary skills, you know, basically have to be in place. So it speaks to that, you know, sort of broadly. But also just remind, you know, our committee members that was part of the Batupili, you know, CAB memo, and it was one of the elements of the total package, you know, along that. We will speak to some of the challenges. Obviously, there's always issues around implementation. We don't think, you know, departments are playing ball, even though it's actually a cabinet decision. And when Lauren speaks, we'll speak to some of the, you know, sort of challenges as well, because it hasn't moved, in our view, from being perceived as a DPSA project, which it isn't. It's a government project. It's a cabinet decision. Every SMS member in the whole of the public service has to do this. But then we don't get the necessary levels of cooperation, for instance, from department. But we can speak to that those issues later. And I'm sure, you know, Lawrence will speak to some of those as well. And then it's just, by way of introduction, those are the issues. But then it's then over to you, Lawrence.
Who you chair? Sorry.
Yeah. Thank you, Chairperson. Good morning to members of the portfolio committee. As the DDG has indicated with regard to the introductory remark, the presentation will just really start with at page 5 to say that, as you are aware, that this Batupil white paper was promulgated in 1997, then 5 years later, that survey was conducted by DPSA to really just check the extent to which the Batupil principles as a new organizational culture has been implemented in our department. And that survey basically indicated that although some departments are showing improvement in service delivery, the majority of the departments are really still treating Batupil as an add-on or as an isolated set of principles that got nothing to do really with the manner within which we conduct in our business on a day-to-day basis. And that cabinet memorandum basically led to those kind of decisions that cabinet therefore took in August 2004. In terms of how, for instance, the Batupil principles can basically be revitalized. So Project Tiger, like the DG indicated, was really just one of those decisions. There are a number of other projects and initiatives that result from those particular kinds of decisions that the DPS is basically involved in, like, for instance, your Know Your Rights campaign, this whole issue of the unannounced visits by politicians to the delivery point and so forth. So then DPSA was basically have this particular task of really implementing this particular decision of cabinet, which says that maybe one other way of revitalizing the Batupil is for to ensure that senior managers, all of from directors to DG, had to undergo a compulsory deployment to the service delivery points on an annual basis, and that this should also be reflected in our performance agreement as one of the key performance areas. which means that by the end of each performance cycle during the appraisal processes, as our supervisor assess our previous assessment, they ought also to engage us in terms of whether we've really gone through to the service delivery point and what happened, for instance, the kind of report that we came up with, what happened to this kind of report and so forth. So then we decided that we can't really just deploy senior managers, you know, without really giving them the necessary tools that will basically enable them to make a meaningful contribution. And then therefore we designed this this project. It's called Project Kaedu. Kaedu is a vendor word. It means challenge. So the project generally consists of two phases. The first phase is we call it the core skills development, you know, which is a fundamental course that is basically based on case studies. The kind of content that is used there is basically based on case studies from the public sector as a whole. There's literally nothing abstract about the content. The managers are given like case studies of real problems that are encountered throughout the public service, and are made, are given the tools on how to go about resolving this particular kind of problem. And subsequently to that, then the second phase, which we call the deployment to the core phase, where now we are also being given the opportunity to go and operationalize that particular kind of content in a more practical way, where, for instance, they are expected to go to service points to analyze service delivery problems and then basically write a short report, with practical recommendations on how basically to unblock those service delivery kind of blockages. Also, the Kaedu project was also influenced by a number of factors. Like, for instance, after we piloted this project in Mpumalanga in November 2004, the province in KZN was in the process of conducting an SMS skills audit to check the extent to which, for instance, the senior managers at that particular province have the necessary competencies as they are reflected in the SMS competency framework. And so those are, like, for instance, some of the information that we're basically taking into consideration to ensure that the project kind of at the end of the day is going to give effect to all these kinds of imperative, like, for instance, where DPSA need to focus on the high impact intervention. How can we make that particular project to ensure that at the end of the day is going to capacitate senior managers to go and do exactly that in terms of their intervention with regards to the implementation of the Batopeli principle. So the whole, one of the objectives is basically to get senior managers to lead from the front in as far as the implementation of the Batopeli principles are concerned. Because I'm sure you are aware that prior to this, it's only the frontline staff who've basically been subjected to a number of courses related to Batopeli, but only to find that their managers are not really sensitized themselves on how to ensure that these principles are implemented. And as a result, we've basically been into a bottomless kind of appeal, because it's them who must basically ensure that they create and the environment that make it conducive for this particular kind of culture to be inculcated and implemented in our workplace. So the project Kaedu is basically based on an action learning format for practical skills development. We decided to really go the action learning approach as opposed to the manner within which people have basically been trained in the country. For instance, in a situation where you attend a particular program
where you are lectured, but you don't really write any exam. Just proving that after 6 months, the skills retention, you are basically in a position to recall only 8% of what you've learned. But with regard to action learning, which is really about learning by doing, you are in a position really to remember or to require 64% of that particular kind of skills. Because here you are not really being trained to go and write an exam and pass, and therefore you forgot. But here you are trained on how to do something in a more practical fashion, and hence basically we adopted this particular kind of an action learning approach, which is also ensure that the very same project is basically directly aligned with some of the initiatives in DPSA, like your service delivery improvement plan, that I think you are aware that this is one of our key project. So the kind of core skills is also in a way complementing and supplementing this particular kind of initiative, in the sense that one of the modules there focus on the whole question of communication, which is really one of the objectives of the SBIP, to ensure that, you know, there's improvement in terms of communication within our department, you know, in line with your accountability principles, and ensure that, for instance, the department is basically committed themselves to ensuring that, you know, they take concerted effort in terms of improving some of their core activity in line with the accountability principles. So this project are in a way really supplementing and mutually reinforcing each other. And so after the pilot in Mpumalanga in 2004, where the project was mainly focusing on five core modules, which is really about the process design, strategic and organizational effectiveness, budgets, you know, how to sensitize them on how, for instance, to track or gauge whether you are underspending or overspending, how to go about managing people effectively in line really with the vital principles and the whole question of communication. The DPSA was basically given another mandate to go and assist KZN. Remember that immediately after the ANC won the election there in 2004, the DPSA to go and assist those departments, number of, I think, six of the departments there, to ensure that they're capacitated, for instance, to enable the government there to carry out this strategic objective. So one of the requirements there was that we come up also with a way of for instance, trying to assist them on issues of leadership and leadership and management development. And in order then to respond to that, we integrated 8 of the 11 SMS competency profiles into the existing 5 core modules of this particular program, to ensure that at the same time, while we prepare senior managers for deployment, you are at the same time rekindling those kind of competencies that all managers are basically expected to have and demonstrate in our day-to-day situation. And then by so doing, the project then became more relevant and appropriate to their day-to-day situation. Because you are aware that these competencies were basically developed after a thorough process of research, you know, with the senior managers themselves as to what kind of skills they think they will need in order for them to perform better. And so these are not really the kind of competencies that were basically imposed by anybody, but the managers themselves indicate that this is what they need, and this is really what you expect to see happening, where, for instance, whatever training that are happening in the public service are in a way for senior managers, in a way trying to give effect to this kind of skills needs. SSSS basically expected. So in our situation, this has basically ensured that the project become more relevant and appropriate and able us to do what we were expected to do in terms of preparing them for deployment, but at the same time, and add on, which is really reaching in those particular kind of skills or competencies that are expected to demonstrate. So in order really to also mainstream this, that decision that cabinet made to say that the whole question of deployment ought to be reflected into our performance agreement. Then the DPSA amended chapter 4 of the SMS handbook that deals with issues of performance management and development system. Now to make it mandatory for all the departments to know that they ought to reflect in their performance agreement the whole question of service, I mean of deployment to the courses, and that is attached, for instance, in the pro forma of performance agreement, which deals with under item 6 of that pro forma, which deals with the whole issues of development requirements. So as I indicated, as you go to page 11, there you see that the core skills development program is basically based on practical exercises and problem solving. In KZN in 2005, we didn't have really the Speaker of the House or the legislature there, also attending this particular program with the senior managers. And then for them really to get a sense as to the challenges that senior managers are basically really encountering. And what is happening here is that most participants, they basically work as syndicate, as groups. And the project is very, very, very intensive, but fun at the same time. In the sense that when you attend this particular program, every day there's no way that, for instance, you can sleep earlier than 10, because people are giving assignments, and then the following day then they're expected to make some sort of a feedback to the facilitators and so forth. And on the last day, on Thursday, then they're expected to got an assignment which integrates all the four modules. And they will tell you that most of them, they go to bed after 12, in terms of trying to come up with that particular kind of integrated assignment for presentation on the following day. And then the best team then got some little bit of prize, just as a sign of appreciation. And then subsequent to that, there's this particular supervisor day deployment to practice those skills that were developed. We've been taking them to the hospitals around in KZN, in Limpopo, gone to Mpumalanga, to home affairs offices, to social grant offices around the country. We've been taking them to border posts, the Bombo border post in Mpumalanga and Swaziland, and also another border post there, so that people can get a sense really as to what are those kind of things that are hindering the implementation of the Batopele principles in those particular kind of institutions. Like the whole question of that module that deals basically with the whole question of process mapping, which enables people to just walk the process and try to understand why, for instance, it takes people something like 3 hours or even 4 hours to get medication at the hospital. What are those kind of processes that are really not really adding value or which make the whole thing to be unbalanced, for instance? Like, for instance, in one social grant office in Makado, in Limpopo, we had a situation where, for instance,
people can apply and get a response for social within 2 hours. While throughout the country and in line with the legislation, they said that work can be done within 90 days. But there are instances where there are no those kind of unnecessary processes where this can be done in two hours. We've got that kind of case studies. So here we're not only just trying to get to get problems, but also to be in a position to identify those best practices so that, for instance, we are in a position to assist those other institutions that are having similar problems. Like, for instance, in Rob Ferreira Hospital in Mpumalanga, we realized that there was a serious problem of file management. But when we were in KZN and in Addington Hospital, find that they've got the best system of managing the filing system. And what we did, we bring in the teams from Addington through the GTZ system, so that they work with Rob Ferreira in Mpumalanga to assist them to also, you know, correct them and put correct measures in place so that they're in a position to manage their files in a more efficient fashion. So all the things, usually after this deployment, when we started this program, we'll, like in Mpumalanga, for instance, the DG there will provide a platform for these managers to come and report as to their findings and basically, you know, invite the head of departments so that they can also, you know, firsthand get the report in terms of, for instance, how service delivery in those different sectors could basically be improved. And it has basically proven that in a situation where, for instance, your senior managers or politicians listen to this kind of report, there's always been some sort of an impact. I mean, like, for instance, again in Mpumalanga, when we started, we found that the CEO of, for instance, Rob Ferreira, was also responsible for two other hospitals, you know, Temba Hospital and another hospital, which are really far from each other. And we realized that it doesn't really make sense, for instance, for one CEO who is, for instance, also paid at the level of the deputy director to be responsible of these three big institutions, because he never really had the time to focus on one. He's forever on the road and so forth. And some of the recommendation was that, no, there's a need, for instance, to ensure that there's one CEO per one hospital so that this particular individual can really focus on this particular institution and ensure that he carries out his mandate as required. One other issue was the whole question of certain delegation authority. Find that although Rob Ferreira, for instance, has a budget that is far more than the budget of the Department of Health in Mpumalanga, the CEO is unable, for instance, to procure anything. That has to be done through the head office in Mpumalanga, but only to find that the staff there, they don't necessarily have the necessary knowledge in terms of the specifications of whatever service they want to procure. And as a result, that tends to create an unnecessary red tape. You have the CEO who cannot, for instance, employ just a mere porter or a sweeper in the hospital. That has to be done by the provincial office. And you find that it takes something like 8 months just to appoint the secretary. And then, but in the meantime, those kind of gaps, you know, lead to you know, affect the morale of the employees there. Because they will tell you that there are people who took pension or resigned some 3 months ago. But the post, five months, 6 months down the line, the post hasn't really been filled. But then it's not really because the CEO can do that. It's because of the legislation that is saying that that can only be done by head office and irrespective of the budget that we've got. And I said, but these are some of the things really that we think that are really hindering the delivery of effective service. And but as a result of that, the Mpumalanga legislature, then they've changed. They've delegated some of the authorities to number of CEOs, and they've for instance, graph that what they call cluster kind of managing hospital, to say that one hospital per hospital. I mean, one CEO per hospital, and no longer, you know, one CEO being responsible for three or more hospitals. And even National Health Department, they have already adopted that particular kind of recommendation. Gauteng, they have done it now. All the CEOs have got particular kind of authority that they never really had before. And I think that those are like some of the impact that this project basically came up with. When you go to page 15, you really see that, like I've already indicated, that the project was piloted in Mpumalanga in 2004, and then used in KZN to address the whole question of leadership and management development. And then last year, we've added more service providers, because now this project now has to be decentralized to provinces. The pilot and the case that N1 probably was basically funded by the DPSA. And now when most of the department now want to bring in their own people here, we said, no, now it must be your responsibility as department to pay for your members. And then to ensure that that particular kind of process is speeded up, then we went out on an open tender and bring more service providers so that they can deal with this high demand. And as we told you now, we've got all the provinces now that are participating in this particular project. We've got over 1,000 members who have gone through this project to date. And like I indicated, that this is now operating in all provinces. And there's also a customized kind of project of this particular project to that is being provided to the Department of Correctional Service. They've already sent all their senior managers except the new commissioner. But they started with all their senior managers, which for me I think is the best way of dealing with it, because if senior managers have done that, you are sure that that cabinet decision will in actual fact be implemented, because they'll know what issues to raise, you know, during the performance cycle, the appraisal time, and so forth and so on. And those who basically have attended this particular program, they basically rated it very, very highly, as being appropriate and relevant to their needs, and with an average of 4.7 out of 5. Everybody who's been to the project basically talk highly about it. Some of their comments are that for all SMS members should attend this program, starting from the top with MECs and HOD. And the speaker of KZL says, now I understand what managers really have to do to deliver. And I hope that at some point members of this portfolio committee might try to check their tax schedule and then just maybe a week or so. Because this project is currently also running here in Western Cape, mainly at Stellenbosch. So I'm sure that days we can talk, maybe we can, like, you know, just to attend, just to have that kind of first-hand experience. And I think you basically better to attest to this kind of comments that other people are basically raising. I think I've talked about the deployment reports, you know, resulting in action, like in Mpumalanga, for instance. And in KZN, these were also, like, for instance, presented to the cabinet. And then at Limpopo, the reports were also reviewed at the MEC level. you know, with the sole purpose of registering, to ensure that, because the recommendations are very practical and implementable. You don't necessarily have to spend more money, you know, but just really put in with processes and ensure that, for instance, people are well placed. Because, you know, in certain instances, we find that there's a long queue, let's say at the reception at the hospital, and not really because there's a shortage of staff, but that most people are really being placed at some of the stations that are not necessarily busy at that particular point in time. And then you left one or two people to deal with a volume of people. So that this for them, how people, for instance, ensure that, you know, people are well placed. You need to understand the trend, for instance, that if it's from 7 to 9, you know there will be this volume of people. You need to be flexible in terms of bringing other people there. Everyone necessarily employing new people all together.
The project really has also been dubbed as one of the most exciting management development initiatives in recent years by our minister on two occasions during a budget vote speech last year and this particular year. And we hope that there's a huge opportunity that exists for improvement in almost all areas that SMF teams have basically visited. Our main challenge really is basically to ensure that we harness this kind of improvement and the best practices and turn them into implementable nationwide. Like I said, that for instance, we find that in Edinburgh, they've got the best way of managing filing system. So in that fashion, you don't necessarily have to go to America or to Britain to go and learn how they deal with this kind of challenges. You can get all this thing here in the country. So our challenge really is how to ensure that this kind of best practices are basically reflected and shared with other stakeholders who are having similar problems, so that you know, we can all contribute to us improving service delivery. The whole issue of with regard to way forward, we believe that we needed really to continue encouraging, in particular, you know, our HODs, DGs, and the DDGs to lead from the front, you know, with regard to this particular decision by attending this particular kind of program, so that then, you know, the rest can just really follow. It is one kind of challenge that we are facing, but also to ensure that some of the big national government departments take advantage of the opportunity, particularly those departments with heavy service delivery programs. Because, like I said, that this particular kind of project is easy, can be customized, like what is happening currently with the Department of Correctional Service. The case studies that they are doing there are case studies related to their day-to-day challenges in correctional service. And when they are given case assignment to do, it's about really resolving their day-to-day problems, you know, in their day-to-day work. So it is easy really to sort of, you know, customize it, especially when, for instance, your home affairs, which is really one of our departments that is playing central in terms of service delivery, and health, and a number of other. And but also the last one really is follow up. How do you follow up on the deployment recommendation? Because at the end of the day, this report, they come up with practical ways of how to unblock service delivery logjam. And the intention really is not really for us to develop nicely written reports, but to ensure that through those reports we are seen ready to be doing something about ensuring that the service delivery basically improves, in so that we are seeing government really to realize its vision of a better life for all.
and ensure that we put the Matopele principle into life. Thank you.
Thank you. I think we must follow what Ms. Nsim was saying, a narrative. Now what you are outlining is a narrative one, so that when you are alone, we consult with that narrative input that you are making, and they try to assist the department in all of these things that you are putting forward. But maybe Doc wants to elaborate further.
Thank you, Chair. Just to indicate, maybe checking the way forward, you know, where we are with this program. Obviously, we, you know, run it every year, and so on. But we have, you know, deemed it appropriate at this point to do some kind of impact assessment, you know, of the project. Because whenever you're implementing some of the objectives in mind, could never be taken for granted that you're meeting those objectives. So going forward this year, we're going to do an impact assessment around, firstly, all of the managers that have gone, what impact on the job when they got back did it have? Because it's sort of 3 years, you know, sort of down the line, so we feel the time is appropriate now to do some kind of impact assessment. Is it having the objectives that are intended and so on? And if obviously, you know, some are not being met, then we decide what adjustments, you know, sort of to make, you know, to the course, you know, sort of itself is quite important. The second aspect of that impact evaluation as well would involve a deployment report, because when managers get deployed onto the service delivery report, then they then write a report on that unit in terms of, okay, this unit is that dysfunctional in X, Y, Z, same manner, and this is what needs to be done from a remedial perspective. So once you assess the extent to which there has been uptake of those recommendations, you know, after the deployment has ceased, if there hasn't been an uptake, what basically are the obstacles, you know, and so on, because we need to know that, because that's the whole point. It's not just for managers to just go for a week and pull out. It's for them to do a diagnostic assessment as to where the problems are, assist, you know, there, and then pull out and then leave the institution with a report. So the institution going forward knows these are some things we want to fix. But we don't think we should just leave it there. I think we should go back and say, what happens to these deployment reports? Is there uptake and so on? But also the other element of it as well, are these reports used for personal development of the managers themselves? Because when the managers go back, let's say you're an HOD, you should go to your MEC and you should sit down and say, well, you know, you're lacking here and there. So going forward, we will do, you know, sort of that, those aspects of the impact assessment. I do think at the level of, you know, how participants feel about the course, I mean, it's well documented here, it's, you know, it's well received and so on, so that is documented already. But it's the other elements that I've spoken to that we want to basically, you know, sort of take forward. So those are our plans for this, you know, current financial year. So we should have a report which will probably, you know, present maybe next financial year around what the findings are. But that which are details, we're going to carry out this financial year. Thank you.
Thank you very much. I think it's a very informative report that you are submitting to us. But I want to give opportunity to the members at least to raise questions. It's KK, I see your hands up. And Jane and Malone and Julia.
Thank you, Chairperson. All I can say is a very excellent report. And it was not just reporting, but was also telling us what's being done when the problem has been done. But there are only two questions to check that through. To see my constituency is up there near border, to border, which is one of the sites we have to. Now, sometimes I go to visit the border post to see what is going on there. That is now the South African Union, Namibia border. We're having a language problem, especially because of officials that are deployed. I think that is also an area that you have to look into at, with Home Affairs, the political Home Affairs. And the one other part is hospitals. I once visited the Kotonia Hospital in Africa. And what we are raising here, what you are raising here, is exactly what I encountered there. You had chairpersons, 8 radiographers to every machine. And the CEO there needed about 52 cleaners. And then he had to wait for authorization from Kimberley. And that authorization was not forthcoming. Doctors, there was a lack of doctors. I got a long list of them. And I think that it was an area that was looking to think.
Thank you, Chairperson. I would like to join my comrades in saying that this is very exciting. Actually, I personally wish I could be exposed to such. I think it's quite exciting, and the only part that I wouldn't like is that of sleeping after 12, because I love my sleep. And coming back to the presentation, Chair, I just want to know the practical part of it, where the participants now, you know, visit the areas where service delivery is taking place, and then analyzing the delivery problems. I just want to know as to how is it actually done in practice. We know without necessarily interfering with the work. Do they do it the way the auditors do it? Do we go there, ask for documentation, analyze documentation? I just want to know how it is done in that case. And then another question is, Chairperson, sorry, I like to go back home. I see on that last slide of the details of attendees, the Northwest, because it has got the lowest number of attendees there, only 14. I just want to know as to whether there are any specific reasons why it is such a case, or is it maybe because, I don't know, I just want to know why. Thank you.
Thank you. I assume that this course is compulsory for SMS. If it's not, I think that should also be looked at, because it's a very important course in order for appraisal reasons. When you give bonuses, I'm sure the bonuses should be tied. If you did not attend the course, then you miss some of your percentage from your bonus. And also, service provider point. I just want to say to you, it's nice to go to those points, but I think you should also understand the social status of the area. And also we do have CDWs. Maybe if you can get the information when you visit the area, you compare their report to what is happening around the area, so that you make the social status of the area. You know, they differ. The service can be good, but not knowing the social status of the area that you're servicing is also the problem. I'm suggesting that maybe the reports from the CDW should also be part of the course reporting format. Thank you.
I want also to join my colleagues in extending our appreciation for this presentation. In particular, one wants to appreciate the fact that in revitalizing Machupik, we've taken a method that tried to relate theory to the actual service delivery, the service delivery point. I think that is important. And also one appreciates the fact that this is also part of the performance management development system in a systemic way to try and make sure that Machupik actually is throughout the various sectors systemic. And I think this is very, very important. Especially the fact that now Cabinet has taken the decision to make it compulsory for it to be part of the performance agreement, because I believe very, very strongly that if we can tighten up that area, there is a potential to enhance the capacity of the state for effective delivery. So So one appreciates that. I can attest, especially this recommendation of delegation. My constituency is Delmas. I know practically the problem of having a CEO in Witbank for Delmas and others. You know. It's a huge hospital itself for Witbank. And you go to Delmas, you don't know who actually is going to come because of delegation. There's a metron and the other one. The one day they refer you to Delmas. It's about 80 kilometers away. You go to the CEO, he tells you, no, I'm overworked, this and this and that. So there was no clear accountability in terms of delegating, you know, jobs, you know, different things to be done. So I appreciate it very much because, I mean, now you go there, you know, this one is accountable. You ask this one, can account instead of referring there. And in that way, it does, because that's a service delivery point. And therefore, you know, it's able to improve service delivery. So we appreciate this kind of intervention. Now, there are three areas. You mentioned on page 18 that all SMS, there's a comment by one participant that they wish this can go. Well, I will exclude the MEC because it's not a part of management. But I'm getting a sense that HOPs were, you know, there are few HOPs who can speak. I'm subject to correction. But because I think it should start there. There can be no assumption. SMS is from director to the HOP. I'm not sure whether this remark is informed by the fact that HODs were not participating, because I think that is the heat of the whole organization, and it cannot be assumed that they are having all the necessary competencies. It cannot be assumed that now they are also, you know, capable of understanding the real situation, you know, that is, I mean, relating the whole theory into the actual service point. So if one can get clarity around that. But also related to that, I wanted to find out from you, this core competence, which I assume, I'm not quite sure, that it becomes mandatory. I mean, now, from your observation, from this department, now, what kind of competencies, you know, from the 11 core, what is the trend then of the 11? That actually the SMS was saying, no, I think I need to be developed here, and so on and so on and so on. If we can get, if it is possible, give us a trend, you know, what is actually common among them. Perhaps that will assist us to get an idea generally, which can also inform family or any other watchman. I want also to appreciate your intervention, Doctor. I don't want to pronounce your name because I may mispronounce it. I want to appreciate the fact that now you intend going to conduct an impact assessment. I think that is very, very important. To actually know what we've done, actually, what exactly is happening.
Thank you. Maybe the department wants to respond to the question raised.
Yeah, thank you. And thanks really for the most of the positive remarks from members. And I think most of the what was said was mainly comments and so forth, but
there are specific questions like the one on how, for example, people go about analyzing service delivery problems in a more practical fashion. You see, there's a framework that they follow. Because you are saying that when people go there, they should understand that there are people who are working there. And they should conduct this in such a way that they don't really interfere with their day-to-day operations. And then, for instance, when people arrive there on a Monday, they are basically being expected, for instance, to an appointment would have been done anyway before in advance to meet with the management that particular hospital or so forth. And after that management, that's the one then that will take people to tour the facility. And subsequent to that, then people will start to make appointments, for instance, to say to the manager that, you know, we're only here for the week. Can we have an interview with you or some of your staff members tomorrow, for instance? And then we'll go and set up, for instance, also another appointment with trade union members. Basically go with that particular kind of a person and then see how long does it going to take for those people to retrieve your file. And then from there, when now you go to pay, if you have to pay something at that particular hospital, from there moving towards another queue that goes to a doctor. You keep on, like, for instance, you know, writing that down, the time it takes and so forth, up until the time when this person then go to the dispensary and then get medication and leave. And then subsequent to that, we also have to interact with the CFOs, for instance, to try and see how much from what is the budget of the institution, what is the trend of overspending and underspending at that particular point. The whole question of an organogram, how many people are there, for the you know, vacancy rate and so forth. So those particular kind of information plus those kind of interview, as well as your own observation, because we also encourage people to use the cameras, for instance. You see a situation where, for instance, the building is not really maintained at all, so we have to ask questions, for instance. Why, for instance, this hospital can't, for instance, repair this particular kind of toilet that is really causing such kind of smell in the hospital? And then they will tell you that the hospital doesn't really have the authority to do that, including just to replace a dope. They will tell you that they have to get public works to come and do that. And in order for public works to come, they need to write a submission that goes to head office, their Department of Health. And from there, the Department of Health then will communicate with Public Works. By the time Public Works come here, we have taken lots of time. And by those are some of the things that give the impression to the recipients of service when they come, saying, really, government is taking us for granted. How can really you get services under this particular kind of condition? And then as we come up with recommendation, we're saying that there's a need here because the department, I mean, the institution has a budget. Why can't they repair this particular kind of, you know, facilities without necessarily this unnecessary bureaucracy and red tape and so on. But then all those kinds of, at the end of the day, like for instance, by the end of the third day, now they sit, because they go there as a group, when others are looking to the finances and the people issues, others are looking to other matters, then they bring all those kinds of notes together, and then they come up with a report. Because also during the course, skills week, they also sensitized on how to write this kind of reports, you know, that will enable you to come up with, at the same time, with recommendations that are practical and implementable. So, and over and above that, people are also taught on how to use the Excel. You'll be surprised to see that most of our SMS members are using these very expensive laptops, but they've never used before. Some of them come for the first time that, you know, they deal with Excel or begin to appreciate the laptops as one of effective management tools that can be used on a day-to-day basis. The whole question of the lowest number of Northwest, I think then that number is important. That number, over the past weeks, Northwest have been like putting lots of the SMS members. But as you are aware, we are like also preparing for the which supposed to be taking place next weekend and so forth, where Northwest was going to be the host. So they've already trained a lot, I think close to more than 60 or 70. But it's like they've adopted the program of ensuring that all of them would have gone through this by the end of the financial year next year. As to the course, whether compulsory or cabinet has never said the course per se is compulsory, but the deployment. So the course is just a platform that we've developed to assist and capacitate SMS members before the deployment. Because we all agree that by just really deploying them, we may not really hit the intended or desired results. So while we are trying to make them understand why it's important really for them to go through the course first and foremost before the deployment. And I think up to that far we've basically been winning in getting them to come and to follow that particular route. Yeah, the whole question of understanding the social status of the area in terms of what's happening and so forth. I think this is a very important fact, issue that you are raising, because as you are aware that Project Kaidu, you know, when it was launched in Mpumalang, it was launched during that week of the public service week, where, for instance, everybody were sent to the service delivery points with questionnaires to go and interview recipients as well as management at this particular kind of institution. And when we were like, you know, developing this particular kind of program, we took into consideration those kind of, you know, report backs from those particular kind of questionnaires. And then there are lots of statistics, for instance, that is being used as part of the content of this particular program. And I think maybe also, you know, using the CDW report, that can go somewhere as well in terms of trying to concretize that. HOD participation, I think if you check the last page there, it's page 26, you see that to date there are close to 17 SMS, I mean HODs, from DGs that have participated in this particular program. In fact, all the DG of Mpumalang as well participated in this particular program during the pilot phase. The very last one, 2026. Yeah, we've got 4 in Free State and 2 in Mpumalang, those HODs, the DGs. But also majority of them came from, the 11 mainly came from KZN. KZN, I think they make it really, the office of the premier is very, very central in terms of giving instruction and direction in this particular regard. Because, for instance, the DDGs in the office of the premier, they all went, the Speaker of the House, we also, it's also at the DDG level. It's also included here as those kind of FMS members. But I think we needed to do much better than this because we think that that's one way that will ensure that this particular kind of decision of cabinet is implemented. Because it doesn't really make sense to say that this should form part of our performance agreement, but then those who are supervising us during that appraisal time, they can't really make a head or tail when they're supposed to engage you on this particular issue. So I think by starting at that level will go some way in really ensuring that that is implemented in a more concrete fashion. The whole question of the core competence was the trend common amongst SMS, and I think the kind of impact assessment that Dr. Shandu referred to, I think will go some way really in terms of shedding light in this particular kind of an issue. But I know that, for instance, in Mpumalanga, they conducted their own skills audit focusing on SMS members in terms of how, for instance, SMS members there possess this particular kind of competence. And they've got the result thereof. But what Mpumalanga then did this last year, they came up with a list of most of the SMS members who, based on that particular audit, there's no kind of gaps. And then they said that they've come up with what they call a community development program that is directed to the SMS members. But they make it compulsory that all of them, they have to attend Project CAED, as they call it their first module. And then subsequently, they also have a second module that will be provided by other institutions, agencies, and then business school. Subsequent to that, they will either take them to Canada or Germany. But for making CAED compulsory within the context of the aggressive development program, basically to acknowledging that at least that these 8 SMS competencies that are basically integrated within this particular project, and that can sort of provide some sort of a foundation within which they build as they move forward in terms of capacitating their manager. But like I said, that particular kind of trend, I think will come clearly after this particular kind of impact assessment, because we need to look into that as well.
I appreciate all the efforts that are being done in the public service to try and improve the quality of service and service delivery generally to our people. I would like to find out from the officials that are here today that do we think that with all these initiatives, I mean, we listened to the earlier presentation, we have listened to this one, which is also a very good one. We have got what is done by some, the Public Service Commission also, they are doing their part. Everybody is trying to, but Chairperson, the fact of the matter is that there is this big gap between the vision that we have as government of where we are trying or where we intend going and what is actually happening on the ground. And I believe, this one is my personal view, that in any organization, it is the leadership that determines as to whether we are getting there or not. And interventions like this one, where we are training the managers, the senior people, to give the right leadership, do we think with what we are doing, are we really closing this gap? Because to me, the gap is getting bigger and bigger by the day. If you look at the comments that we hear now during the strike, that, okay, children are not going to school, we see what the teachers are doing, people are dying in the hospitals, we see what the nurses are doing. But generally, those are the only people that we miss, because, you know, whether public servants are in their offices or not, to some of us, it's the same. I mean, those comments are disturbing to us as politicians. So I know that the people around this table will not give the answers, but, you know, I would like to get a sense of what is lacking. Is it our leadership in this department? If that's the case, what is lacking? I know this is a topic for assistance, I'm sure, but it is, we need to get a sense as to whether, really, is it worthwhile? Do we have to change something drastically? What is lacking? Thank you.
I'm not sure, Doc, whether we need to review the IDP. Listening to you today, practically you pick up what I always pick up in my constituency. You go to a school that is vandalized. You bring the MEC for education. The response that he or she gives to the community is not my responsibility. It's the responsibility of public works. But the people out there in the society, they see this is a school, is your responsibility. Now, it means then whoever attends to those communities, all these embassies should go together so that they give answers. Do we have the capacity to carry on that? I say no. Now, I'm trying to say then in what chain is putting that. Last is that, in your view, we are not interrogating you as officials, as South Africans. We put these policies in place, we put our way forward, practically to which things that we should continue doing things the way we are doing, are they practical enough to address the service delivery on the ground? Certain things need to be done. Whether it's us that must take decisions to implement those as politicians, but you also have a responsibility to tell us our view. We believe that this 1, 2, 3 should be done, because you take all these things to cabinet, and cabinet maybe takes long time. We are the ones that are supposed to pressurize them to speed up on this issue. We're going towards our 15th year. The reason why Mugabe has been facing that problem, he took too long to respond to certain things. Now he's taking hard decisions, which is not acceptable by the people. And we need to guard against that as South Africans. As the last country in the African continent, we need to learn from those mistakes. Now, we're not saying tell us what to do, but as you go along, try to get maybe some recommendations that you can bring to us so that you can implement for the benefit of the society.
One word.
I would just pose this question to both of you. Isn't what this watchdog and the report they are giving addressing exactly your concerns? Isn't that exactly what they are trying to do now? That's my feeling, that exactly what they are saying and reporting to us today is exactly challenging and addressing your concerns, that they want to go into this and come up with a solution and close this gap you see all the time.
And you are not putting a question. You are saying what the challenge that is facing us all, you inclusive,
yes,
is that. Because they have submitted now a report to us. We all need to put our heads together and to address those things.
Yes, sir.
That's a good point you raise, but also you are not raising a question to us. Maybe if we are alone, we must sit down and look into those things. What is the best way of going to that? You want to say something, Chief? You look like begging to say something. Yeah.
Well, not really, but I think if you've read those magazine that we brought the last time when we were here, you'll realize that the common issues that have been raised at the conference of service delivery are mainly more HR related. Because wherever we go, whether hospital or home affairs, they'll tell us that they don't have the job. And as a result, they are not assessed. And because they are not assessed, therefore they can't get any performance bonus. And because then they are not assessed, it means that the Skills Development Act is not implemented at that particular department. Because then there's no career passing, because career passing should be informed by the skills gap that comes out of the assessment. And a number of them that are HR related. Then we keep on asking ourselves this particular question as to whose responsibility is that? Is it DPSA's responsibility, or is it the Department of Health to ensure that those issues are addressed at those hospitals? Or is it the responsibility of the Department of Home Affairs to ensure that those particular problems are resolved? Because before you sort out those particular issues, there's no way that particular principles are going to be realized, that particular kind of issues. So those are some of the things that really demotivate people. And that's for obvious reason, as you are aware that since the public service reform in 1996, nothing has been done at that local level. Nothing has been done. And we hope that maybe the single public service initiative will go somewhere in addressing this. But that's when, maybe after 2009, that the single public service issue will come into effect. What happened in the meantime? So for me, I think these are some of the key challenges that they ought to be dealt with if we are going to make an immediate kind of an impact at those particular kind of issues. Because we can continue training them, but as long as the environment is not conducive in terms of giving effect to those particular kind of issues, nothing is basically going to happen.
12%.
You can give them 12%, but as long as you don't address those particular kind of issues. That issues of morale, lack of morale, is always there.
But I think you what you are saying is we are challenging the head of the department to say, guys, you've got the authority to mobilize the resources. The resources are at your disposal. Human resources, finance, physical resources. Why can't you make it happen? That's all we are saying.
Yeah. Maybe, my 2 cents why I think of this. I think obviously there's a myriad of problems, and which we, as the committee member indicated, we can't, sort of resolve here. But I do think one of the most fundamental ones has been, in the manner in which we approached, recruitment or whatever. Because I think the assumption has always been that if you got a degree, then you can actually do the job. Without necessarily, subjecting to the necessary, induction, training, and all of those kinds of things. Because one of the greatest travesties, is this whole understanding issue. Okay, for example, you get money, and then departments cannot spend money, which then means there's a lot of skills that people lack, financial skills, planning skills, or whatever, and all of those kinds of things. So you have a situation where service delivery needs are not being met, but not because the resources aren't there, but we just cannot use it. you know, and so on. So I think that's been one of the fundamental mistakes that we've made, that, you know, meant for the minimal, which is fine, but then we didn't say, so, you know. And when you look at things like Batupili, for example, I do think the lack of leadership has been a very big problem. Yeah. If you look at the thing that we have to do as DPSA, where we have to get buy-in from people, it should be the other way around. There should be, you know, but we have to go to HODs and say, well, we're not aware where to do SDIT, for example. Okay, so it means there isn't even the requisite grasp of some of the frameworks, legislation, and all of those kinds of things, which is a problem, which would point to the need for, you know, very, very serious induction courses. By the way, I'm not necessarily saying a degree is not such, is insufficient. What I'm saying, we just said, if you have a degree, then they can do the job. And a lot of the issues that you're raising with are actually pointing to the fact that actually there is a gap. Because the public service is a very specific environment. There's a lot that you have to acquaint with. It's highly regulated. You've got to know, you know, the legislation, frameworks, and all of those kinds of things. And I do think, you know, a lot of the things we, it's only now we, you know, basically becoming aware of them. And they would, like in Saudi, for example, now they're moving towards an induction course, you know, which is going to be mandatory. They're going to massify it and so on. I think we'll respond to some of the. But I think one of the legacies is this underspending issue, which is a big problem. Because the resources are there, but service delivery needs are not being met. I mean, you see all the time on special assignments, very horrific situations about service delivery needs are being at the hospital and so on. But I'm sure when you go in, there's underspending in that hospital. You know, the money's there, but it can't be spent. It goes back to the treasury and so on. So, which then means that people don't have the necessary skills, you know, across the whole range of areas that they may have them in to actually, you know, finance, you know, and all of those, you know, other kinds of skills, which would mean that basically points to the gap, you know, in my view, around, you know, proper induction into the environment within which one is going to function. So we don't have the situation where we have to run around the CPSA and get buy-in from managers to draft SDIT, to give us this, to give us, they're not aware they're supposed to do it. Then it means basically they're ill-suited for the environment they're in. They're not aware of all of the, what the requirements are. It makes our job difficult. I mean, even when I was at the Public Service Commission, it was a similar problem. Okay, not just around SDIT, but a whole range of areas where there's meant to be compliance. You struggle, okay, because departments don't have those things in place and so on. So we should point to some, you know, kind of like, deficiencies of, but the biggest legacy as the economy is the understanding. I mean, that's the biggest problem we've got. The money is there, but you know, a lot of the things that come on special assignments shouldn't be there because the resources to deal with them are actually there. But if you go back, I mean, I think there was even a case of Natal Street Hospital. You know, all of the problems there, and all that is about just understanding. The money is there actually. So if they were spending all of the money, then half the problems wouldn't be there and so on. But I do think the missing link is just this induction program, which has to be comprehensive, has to be, you know, compulsory. It's got to be like, you know, it's being massified. Hopefully it will address some of our problems. But that's not the only problem, obviously. But I'm just saying, you know, those are, that's one aspect of it, at least in my opinion.
I think if I... when you reflect about this, one of the things that happened in 1999 was the establishment of the cluster system, which was intended to have an integrated service delivery at the point of service. And I believe that over the years, an attempt has been made probably at national and provincial, but it hasn't really, in a sense, caught on at local, you know, at the local government level where the services are rendered. I think one of the issues that one of the things that would have to change, and I think it's embodied in the single public service, is really a seamless delivery at local government. Because in some of the NDISOs, I recall when I was in the presidency that one of the NDISOs in the Eastern Cape, there was a problem with a geyser, that took close to 2 years to resolve. And the issue was, it was either public works, provincial local government, health, and it just kept revolving until the intervention. Now, I mean, it's extraordinary that a presidency has to intervene for a geezer in a local hospital. Whereas if there was integrated service delivery, that would not have happened. I think that is one of the key challenges of having all of the services speak to each other at the point of delivery. It would cut down tremendously in terms of time lags and the speed with which services are delivered. For me, I think that is the most critical thing, because you can do all of the training that you wish to train, but if that mechanism is not operational at the point of delivery, it makes it very difficult.
Going home. I'm one of those who want to rush to school.